Always nice to catch up with Edwin Moses, a true champion, former Olympian. He won the gold medal in the 400-meter hurdles in the 76 games in Montreal, the 84 games in Los Angeles. He also took home a bronze medal as well. And if you take a look at his career, very, very successful in track and field, but off the track and field as well. And we're going to talk about that a little bit later on. Edwin, every athlete after their career is over has to put that career in some type of perspective for themselves. Tell me about the process you went through and putting that into perspective, and what perspective did you ultimately come up with?
Well, Ron, for me, it wasn't that difficult because I had worked as an engineer. I studied physics and engineering at Morehouse College. I had been working as an engineer in the early part of my career, and I was set on either going into engineering or medicine. So for me, I was always thinking, well, number one, I didn't know how long I would be around to run. 1976, when I first ran the first Olympics, there were guys like Arnie Robinson, who was 28 years old, and he was called himself a grandfather. And because track and field was pretty amateur at that point, we weren't allowed to legally make money, and it wasn't a professional sport. After college, a lot of the athletes would run for 2, 3, 4 more years, and then you had to get a job. So I was always focused on getting a job, and I went to graduate school at the end of my career to get my MBA, and so there was never a thought that I would be doing something after sports. I had no idea what it would be, but nonetheless, I knew I would be doing something after sports.
You majored in physics and industrial engineering, as you said, at Morehouse. Now, looking at those two areas, I would think that track and field was perfect for Edwin Moses because those two academic areas are oriented toward understanding what not only happens, but why it happened and kind of breaking it down. So, in other words, track and field being an individual sport, being a hurdler as well, they went together. Am I correct in that observation?
Yeah, you are, because I had to break things down because I didn't have a serious background. I was pretty much a mediocre athlete in high school and developed to be better than everyone that was better than me in high school because I stuck with it. And so with a lot of my classmates who also, today they're doctors and engineers, we kind of put together a training program that we thought would work. We were sort of like McHale's Navy. But we were serious about track and field. We weren't the best performers, but we had a very good training program, and that's what elevated me to be able to win a gold medal in 1976. So, yeah, that's absolutely. And, you know, the engineering and physics is quantitative, where you begin to measure things, and track and field is a sport where everything is measured. It's either a height, a time, or a distance, and performance is very, very incremental. In some events, it could be hundreds of a second a year, 2 or 3 tenths of a second in like 110 hurdles or 100 meters is a tremendous amount. And there's no way you can expect that kind of performance every year. So we measure things in hundreds of a second, if not tenths.
Were you driven to track and field out of necessity because the experience you had with a team sport in high school, you were dropped from the high school basketball team? And I'm just wondering whether there was kind of a chip on your shoulder and you said, hey, if they don't want me on a team sport, then I'm going to go out and do my thing.
I was interested in individual sports because I was a small football player in high school and I never got a chance. And in basketball, I wasn't one of the taller guys, so I felt like I didn't get a chance. But in track and field, and I did all three sports, actually. In track and field, I found that size really didn't matter. And it really came down to heart and gut. So I started seeing a lot of improvement in track and field, and I didn't have to wait around for a coach to tell me whether or not I was good. That's the part of track and field I like, the individual part, the part that builds character, the part that that motivates you, and the part that you have to have a motivation from the inside in order to perform well.
You know, I always think back and smile a little bit. When Ronaldo Nehemiah was playing in the National Football League with the San Francisco 49ers, I got to know him a little bit when he was here. And I'll never forget that game, and I believe it was against Atlanta, where he was going across the middle and really got laid out. And I stopped to think of the beauty and the fluidity of track and field compared to the brutality and the physicality of football. And I just don't know how you make that mental switch to the beauty of one and the brutality of the other.
Well, I can tell you that all of us in track and field, we felt his pain as well that day. Everyone was talking about it, and I guess that was his inauguration to pro football. But he played football in high school. He was a very good quarterback. I played, but I wasn't really all that good because of my size. And, you know, individual sports take a different type of person because you don't have that team aspect around you. And basically, you're an individual solo artist. And that's what I like. And I think that's what track and field people like about the sport, the individuality of it, and the fact that when you work hard, you get the results and you take credit for it.
I'm going to ask you a question about the Olympics off of a comment that Carl Lewis made to me one time. He said that the competition to make the United States national team was harder than the competition he found in the Olympics. He said because you don't know all the competition that you're going to see in the Olympics, but boy, the pressure and the focus on you when you're trying to make that U.S. national team was a lot harder for him, at least, than he found in the Olympics. How did you find it?
I would agree with that, and the other reason is that we have a feeder system, the NCAA system. You know, we have a dedicated system. We're the only country in the world where athletes after high school, and even in high school, most countries in the world, I can't think of any, to be honest with you, maybe in Canada, but they don't have, like, high school leagues in basketball, football, soccer, tennis, gymnastics. And then the university system, they don't promote sports. It's all private and through clubs. But here in the United States, we have fantastic high school federation and the NCAA, which promote sports. And therefore, between the ages of 18 and 25 years old, we have the best development system. And therefore, we produce the best athletes because we have more competitions, more intense competitions. And so to make that team, it is intense. It's very intense. And there's no room for errors. That's the thing about it. You could be a world record holder, Olympic champion, but on those 3 days of your competition, you have to come in first, second, or third, or you stay at home.
Is it changing in the world, though? We see the rest of the world playing better basketball. We know what the rest of the world can do in soccer. There are certain individual track events in which the Africans dominate in the long distances and everything. Is that changing, Edwin?
I think it's changing in events like long distance where you don't need any equipment. I mean, you can get a bunch of school kids in countries like Tanzania and Kenya and Ethiopia. You know, those kids run 3 to 5 to 8 to 10 miles a day to school every day, home and to school and back. And so when you have kids doing that, you're going to have some great distance runners. And then when you get a couple of heroes, people who win gold medals, it becomes a whole different ball game, and then they become much more competitive. And the other factor is that a lot of the athletes from around the world are trained in the United States in the NCAA, or a lot of the college coaches end up going to other countries to coach. And there's just a lot more information out there in terms of coaching these days anyway.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, it's almost necessary if you happen to have some talent from one of those smaller countries that you have to go into a sophisticated training method where you get that polish put to your kind of raw athletic ability, don't you?
It helps in certain events. The technical events, it definitely helps you. Most people are not going to sit there and figure out what needs to be done like I had to do in the 400 hurdles because that's essentially what happened to me, that most athletes don't have the knowledge, they don't need the research. And in many, many countries, they just straight out don't have the facilities. So if you get any athlete of any nationality, any race, who's interested in an event, whether it's swimming or cycling or track and field or speed skating, gymnastics, it doesn't really matter. You get a motivated person, give them good coaching and facilities, chances are they're going to become a lot better. And that's really the problem in all sports around the world, and even in the United States, where a lot of athletes that could be good in certain sports just don't have the chance. There's not enough swimming pools in the African American community, for example, to even teach kids how to swim to keep from drowning, you know, because the rate of drowning for black kids is 3 times as much. So a lot of it is just cultural and just facilities.
When you think back about standing on that winner's stand and hearing the national anthem and receiving your gold medal at the Olympics, I think different athletes have different emotions and different reflections on it. What were your reflections?
Well, the first time, you know, I went in planning to win. I didn't know, well, I knew about the Olympics, but I didn't know about the fanfare, the village, all the life of, you know, the short lifespan of an Olympian between that time you make the team and the time you compete in the Olympics, which is about 4 to 6 weeks. I really didn't care about that. I was focused on running a competition on a certain day at a certain time. And so I was very much internally happy when I crossed that finish line. And after that, everything really was a blur to me. I really didn't care that much about what happened. My job was out on the track. And, you know, back in the days in the early 70s and mid 70s, you know, we didn't have all the promotion and PR and celebrations and, you know, look at me type of attitude. People went in, they were serious athletes, and they went in to win. And if they won a race, they were humble and gracious to the other competitors and just happy that we were there and able to survive and win.
Edwin Moses is with us, two-time Olympic and world track and field champion. We continue across the country and around the world. We've got you on America's Sports Talk Show.